We'll begin. This is an oral history interview at Westminster School on the 23rd of October 2015 with Elizabeth Wells, archivist, and
Sir Stephen Barrett.
Could we begin by talking a little bit about your family background, your parents, your early childhood before you came to the school?
Yes, certainly. I first came to the school in September 1945 through the under school. I'll go back on that if I may. I first came to Westminster School at the under school stage in January 1945 and came to the big school in September 45. I had an American mother. My father was English. Of course, he was a Cambridge and Harvard educated PhD, and when I came here, he was Secretary of the Civil Service Commission. His immediate boss as chairman of the first commissioner was Sir Percival Waterfield, who was quite a distinguished and rather older old Westminster. My mother had taken my sister and me to the United States after the fall of France in June 1944. So I spent 4 years at school there, coming back in 1945 when the question was, where would I go? My father consulted his boss. The boss recommended Westminster School, still in the country, but the other school was here and the end of the war was in sight. So this is where I came. I got an exhibition, first of all, in the summer of 1945. I was for 1 year an exhibitioner in what was then Holmburnham, the combination of Ashburnham and Home Borders, when the school reopened in September 45. In 1946, I got the top scholarship to college, and so I spent 4 years in college.
What was your first impression coming back to London after having spent time in America? Was it a real shock?
It was something of a shock. It was, of course, wartime London that I returned to. Oddly enough, or perhaps sensibly enough, there were quite a few boys here who had also been evacuated to the United States. You mentioned earlier, talking to me, Geoffrey Eaker. He was one of them. And we formed a little subgroup of the boys in the school because we'd had experiences which were slightly broader or certainly slightly different from what was available here. The school was, of course, immensely small when it returned. In fact, it had nearly collapsed, I think. It was probably only the efforts of John Christie as headmaster who had kept it going and brought it back in September 45. At a school at a time when I think the numbers were probably around about 200, quite different from what it is today.
Where was the under school based exactly? Which buildings were
in Grants? Absolutely. And Luke Herman's mama taught us on the top floor of Grants in a room which later was used by my two sons when they came here as a dormitory.
And who were the other members of staff who ran the underschool at that time?
The former undermaster, Arnold Willett, was at that time head of the underschool. There were two others. There was F.M. Murray Young, who taught mathematics. Mr. Earp, F-O-M-E, Earp, who I think dealt with science. Mrs. Herman, who taught foreign languages, and I can't remember anything else.
Do you remember sitting the entrance exams to get into the great school?
Yes. Well, not the entrance exam, but the challenge.
And was it a terrifying prospect?
It was less terrifying, in a sense, the first time I took it than the second. And that is because I had foolishly tried to teach myself Latin verse. And I hadn't got very far, and there was a paper called Latin Verse Composition, and I must have done rather well on other papers, because I certainly did stinkingly poorly on that.
And then you started originally, you said, in Holmburnham.
Yes.
Where was Holmburnham based?
I can almost point it out. It's as you come through the archway and you pass where the guards or whatever you call them now sit.
Security.
There's a sort of semi-round building there and underneath there. Ashburnham House was at that time used by the Churchill Club, which was basically for, I think, primarily American officers as a for recreation place. And sometime, I think, during that first year, it was reclaimed by the school.
So when you started in the underschool, there were still American officers coming through Little Dean?
Occasionally, yes.
Must have been very interesting.
Yes.
And then you sat the challenge again and got your scholarship to college.
Yes.
But college had been very badly bombed in the war.
College had been totally bombed. I mean, it was just a shell open to the elements, in essence. And so college itself occupied 19 Dean's Yard. And the housemaster's flat was just over the archway. I suppose what it must be number 18 now.
And who was the master of the scholars at that time?
David Simpson.
Did you get on with him?
He was a rather cold fish, but a fair fish. Quite strict in his way. One of my minor rebellions was to wear brown shoes rather than black shoes. Shoes were, of course, rationed in England at the time. And I got away with that for many years. The other rebellion which lasted, I'm afraid, was to wear rather flamboyant American ties during the holidays. He didn't approve of that, but what he did do on one occasion, and I'm very grateful to him, was that the American musical comedy Oklahoma opened at the Theatre Royal Drury Lane. I think it must have been my third year here, and he gave me permission to go to that one evening.
Was it very interesting being at a school in London? You spoke about that opportunity, but were you able to take advantage of what was going on in town?
Within the boundaries of the school, I don't know how they've changed since my time, but they were Trafalgar Square in that direction, and Victoria Station in the other direction. And if you can't find what you want to find in that area, whatever it is, for better or for worse, you are a very poor explorer. Later years, a friend of mine from college and I found an agreeable pub, which the masters probably knew about, but we never saw them there.
They were probably in a different pub around
probably
the corner.
In a different pub, yes.
And was the school very disrupted by the damage that had been taking place during the war?
Apart from the fact that college had nowhere to go except number 19. I don't think it really was. The teaching and the sports all resumed, I imagine, as they were before, smaller in scale because numbers were smaller. The teaching remained of a consistently high standard as far as I was concerned.
And were you conscious of rebuilding work taking place? Were there builders around the place or not?
They knocked down the air raid shelters, which were in Little Dean's Yard. During my time, the whole school was roofed over. I think most of the work was done in the term time. College itself was rebuilt in my last year, 49-50, it was meant to be ready in January 45, and I came back from a holiday in the States expecting to move into the rebuilt college. I was told to retrace my steps to 19 Dean's Yard. It was finished during the course of that term, so that the first term, the election term, which was when the King came to formally reopen it, we were all upstairs.
And was that very exciting, being in the new building?
Yes. it was better equipped and things like that, in all sorts of ways.
And were you involved in the opening ceremony?
Yes, I made a speech in Latin at the King.
And were you introduced to the king?
We were introduced to the king, and afterwards it was strawberries and tea, tables divided up. I was with the queen and others, and friends of mine from college, senior monitors, were with the king, as I remember.
Were they interested in the school and in you?
Yeah, they were, yes. They had, you see, been here before, I think, in the 1930s to a Latin play. So they had some recollection, obviously, of that occasion.
But am I right in thinking that the Latin play didn't take place whilst you were at the school?
Quite correct.
Yes. Were there other plays and drama going on?
Yes. There were various house plays of various merits, but particularly after Stephen Lushington arrived in the school, the school productions, I remember, the production of Hamlet in particular, were really rather excellent. There was an earlier one of, what's the name of the play, Androcles and the Lion, and they were well received.
Were they put on up school?
Up school, yes.
And were they sort of, were there professional costumes, good scenery, or...?
There was an art master by the name of, I can't remember his first name, Spall, who was a very good scene painter at any rate. The costumes, how they were made, I don't know, but obviously some sort of skilled assistance was necessary there. It was well done.
Did you act when you were at school?
No, I would have been an appalling actor.
And did you take part in sport?
Yes. For my first two autumn terms, I played football, and also for the Lent terms as well. I'm not a great ball player, but I found a good home on the river, so water was my station for my last 4 years, in effect. I ended up as head of the water.
Did you have to travel down to Putney for the boathouse?
We went to Putney by boathouse, yes.
And did you ever take part in rowing to Blackrod Steps?
You're quite right. We did on one occasion row down to the steps and were invited in for tea.
So that tradition continued?
Yes.
Was it a successful period for the school?
A sporting success, you mean?
Yes.
Or no, I think, you know, we were the underfed city dwellers at the time. And when we came up, my first year that we rowed at Henley in 1947, we were probably the lightest school crew ever to have rowed at Henley and were thoroughly badly beaten by some much bigger, stronger, tougher boys from, I think it was Bryanston or maybe in Radley. We put on a bit of weight in the next couple of years, but basically it was not easy. And in fact, in the last year, the master in charge of rowing, and the records of this may exist in the water ledger, tried to prevent us, from the school eight, from going to Henley on the grounds that we weren't good enough. And I put up a certain amount of fight and argument with him and with the successor to David Simpson as housemaster, who is John Carlton, who subsequently, of course, became headmaster, but who moved over to become acting headmaster until Walter Hamilton arrived. And there was quite a argument going on, which I'm glad to say I won, and we did go to Henley in 1950. It didn't do any better. I think we may have won one race, but it was great fun to be there.
Was the food a real shock to the system after having spent some of your childhood in America?
Well, America, believe it or not, did have a form of rationing, but my wife will always say that we didn't live as one had to live in England during the wartime years, and of course she's right about that. It was pretty lousy, I must say. Kept body and soul together, but you know, schoolboys were at that time, and perhaps still are, perpetually hungry. And of course there were other things like you had a sweet ration, which was negligible. And We managed to keep alive, and no one sort of died of hunger while they were here, but whenever one went away for weekends, for example, you had took small rations of butter or bacon with or sugar or tea, which were doled out to you because you were going to someone else's house or your own family home, and you went and took those as a sort of some compensation for the chore of putting you up over the weekend.
Where did your parents live whilst you were at the school?
They lived in Manhattan.
Ah.
So I went there for two out of three holidays a year.
And for the other holidays, where did you go?
I either stayed with friends from school or family friends, or the last 2 years, I and another boy who was in college certainly went to France.
And how long did it take you to travel to Manhattan in the holidays?
On a plane, it would have taken 19 hours, counting a stop in 1 hour in Shannon, 1 hour in Newfoundland on the way. Coming back, I always tried to come back by a boat. It would take about 4 or 5 days on whatever Cunard boat was going at the time.
And would you travel by yourself?
Yes.
Was this scary or...?
It was the most marvellous thing I've ever done. You could reinvent yourself, you could meet new friends, you could meet girls, particularly in the summer. It was a most liberating and enhancing experience.
And your parents weren't worried about sending you off?
No.
Were all the meals in College Hall?
Yes.
And what was a typical meal? Can you remember?
Porridge or cereal for breakfast, toast made in a sort of automatic toaster machine, two little squares of kind of mixture of butter and margarine, some marmalade or jam. That'd be breakfast. Lunch was clearly the bigger meal of the day. A bit of meat or fish, potatoes, probably some. Whether it's Swedes or cabbage or something like that, perhaps a kind of sweet of some sort. There was a sort of tea meal at about 6 o'clock, I guess, which would have been, might be baked beans on toast or something like that. Very rarely an egg would appear during the course of the week. On one occasion, some friend of ours organised for me to be sent a package of eggs from Denmark, which was, of course, had a superb dairy, which is a tradition which had survived the war. What could I do with a dozen eggs? I couldn't eat them all myself. They were delivered to me in college, number 19. I had to give them out to other members. We all had boiled eggs. I didn't. Mine was a rotten egg, the one rotten egg of the occasion. Local misery and temporary misery, I can assure you. And in the evening, after prayers in St. Faith's Chapel, I don't know if that still goes on in college or not.
No, it doesn't, no.
We would have a cup of milk and a glass of milk, mug of milk and a slice of cake provided by the matron.
Ah, and do you remember the matron?
Yes, well, she was lovely.
Can you tell us a bit more about her?
Well, she was the widow of the first housemaster of Busby's, Mrs. Hillary. And she was really kind, charming, delightful person who really did take care of us. We all had either chickenpox or measles at some stage. And, we were well looked after at the time. She was a very nice woman indeed.
Where was the... was there a surgery or a medical centre?
There wasn't a medical centre as such, but we had there was a school doctor, a Dr. Gates, who would, I think, visit the school every day and go into see whatever house had patients. I don't know how he was told in advance or not whether there was someone who was sick, but he would come and look at us.
So you didn't have to be sent into quarantine or...
No, well, with chickenpox, easier to pack us all in together as it worked its way through the people in the house who hadn't had chickenpox before.
What sort of subjects did you enjoy at the school?
I enjoyed my history. I mean, I was basically a history scholar and got a history scholarship to Oxford and changed to PPE while I was there. But I was extremely well taught by a very fine New Zealand, former New Zealand Rhodes Scholar, Winston Monk, who was later killed in one of those early Comet aircraft crashes in Singapore. But he was a really remarkably fine teacher. I liked all my teachers, basically. The Latin and Greek in the shell, which was basically the school certificate year. I don't know whether names of the forms will have changed, certainly, won't they? But the shell was the year in which bright people, boys would, at the age of 15, would take the school certificate examination. And I've been taught Latin and Greek by someone by the name of Troutbeck, who was a good teacher, but probably not the best classical teacher in the school. But by the time I left, I had 3 years on the history side. What happened at that time was, having taken school certificate, if you took it early enough, you would face doing 3 years of your special course, which either would be classics or history or mathematics or French, modern language, only French and German, basically, or of course the sciences. And I chose history, and I spent 1 year in the history sixth, as it then was called, then 2 years of the history seventh.
And that class was taught by?
The first year was taught by my initial housemaster in Holmburnham, James Peebles, who then became housemaster of Rigo's in succession to Dr. Rudwick, I think his name was, Mr. Rudwick. And he taught history not particularly well, I have to say. But Winston Monk in the History 7th was really a superb teacher.
Do you know anything about his background? Because I've heard a lot of people talk about what an inspirational teacher he was. But how did he come to be in England?
Well, he was a New Zealander who got a Rhodes Scholarship, obviously, at some time during the 1930s. During the war, he somehow joined the British Council and spent some time, I think, in South America, if I remember correctly. And then I don't know when he came back to this country, but was, you know, certainly well-rooted at an early stage here.
And what sort of history did you study at the school?
A mixture of English history and European history. I'm probably the only Englishman, certainly, who studied quite a lot of history, who's never studied the Tudors and Stuarts. But with Winston Monk, we went up from and the Anglo-Saxons through Henry II, certainly, and then again the 18th and 19th and early 20th century, all English history, and European history, 19th century European history, and again some medieval history. I think they must be the 11th and 12th centuries, which are very good periods to study.
So you did study the 20th century in your history classes?
Well, the 20th century, of course, ended rather earlier at that time than it did now. But it was basically stopped at 1919.
After the end of the First World War.
Yes.
Were you interested in, and your contemporaries, were you interested in the Second World War, which was very recent at that stage?
Of course, enormously interested. And obviously a number of masters in the school had been serving in one of the branches of service, armed services, during the war.
Were they happy to talk about their experiences?
I really don't know. I don't think I ever asked them. I never heard of them being asked by others.
And were you in the CCF at
Yes.
school? Who was that taken by?
It was initially taken by the person who was the first housemaster of Grant's when I came back. His name was Murray Rust. I think the initials were T.M. Murray Rust. And later by the successor to James Peebles as housemaster of what had become Ashburnham, Mr. Rawes, I think the initials were J.P. Rawes. And of course his son was, I think, a teacher here himself. May still be for all I know.
No longer. I have met him, yes.
Yes.
And how often did the CCF practice?
Tuesday afternoons.
Were all the boys in the CCF?
No. You could choose to do the Scouts if you were specifically inclined.
And did many people choose to do the Scouts?
It varied from house to house, probably more in college, for perhaps reasons which one can understand, given the mentality of a King's Scholar, as we were at the time.
And did you take part in any sort of field days or
yes.
expeditions?
Yes. Field days, well, very often, I mean, at least once or twice a term, we would be taken to Richmond Park, and we would... I've attacked a hill where I've walked over a number of times since then with my children.
And did you ever go on any school trips abroad
in no.
that time?
No.
Were there any organised at all?
Not that I remember at all. One has to recall that at the time it was you were limited at one stage, I think it was only £5. It may have gone up to £25 towards the end in the amount of foreign currency you could take abroad. Mm-hmm. And obviously there were ways of getting round that if you had connections. Some of my friends went skiing. I think Geoffrey Eaker, whom you saw earlier, certainly did go skiing. How that was arranged, I simply don't know.
You've mentioned that you liked all of your masters, but do any of them particularly stand out in your memory?
Besides Monk, of course, he taught me more than anything else. Ted Craven stands out in my memory. And did you ever know him? Well, he probably left the school, but he was here when my own boys arrived here. He taught Latin and I think divinity as sort of sub-subjects to people who, like me, were on the history side of the school at the time. But my life was dominated by Winston Monk, there's no question about that.
I saw in the Elizabethan that you were an active member of the Debating Society.
Yes.
And also something called the Essay Society.
Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit about those activities?
Well, I could write essays, and I think on one occasion I wrote an essay. I can't remember what it was about. The Debating Society, I joined partly because Mr. Monk was sort of the master in charge of it, and also because... quite a number of the more senior people on the history side were members of the society, in particular somebody by the name of Oleg Kerensky. I may have succeeded him or maybe someone as secretary of the Debating Society. We tried to get two or three times a term outside speakers to come in and take one side or other of a motion, and I remember seconding a motion, I can't remember what it was, proposed by somebody now known as Tony Benn, who spoke fluently, and I was a very miserable after follower seconding him.
Can you remember the motion?
No.
We'll have to try and look it up. Mm. Was it easy to find people willing to come into the school?
Enough of us had connections with parliamentarians of some sort or other. So, you know, I think one could count on probably about one at least one a term. On other occasions, it was just boys, and one of the problems I had as secretary of the society was twisting arms to find people who were willing to take one side or other of a motion. But you know, the art was in trying to draft it where there's something to be said on either side.
Where did the debates take place?
They would take place in the on the first floor of Ashburnham House.
And were they very well attended?
Maybe about 20 people in all. Of course, the school was smaller. It took place after everyone else had, all the home boarders, so to speak, had probably left the school, or a great majority had. And so it was really something primary, I think, for the boarding members of the school community at the time.
Was it very different being a boarder, do you think, the experience that you had of the school to the day pupils?
I think it was a much wider and better experience, really. I mean, I took to it for, you know, quite smoothly and easily, I think.
And what was it like when you first started boarding at the school? What was the were there any initiation rites?
There was a strange thing in college called the word test. Has this been spoken to you about it before? Which basically all people coming, all juniors coming into college being presented before, in the holidays beforehand, by a book of some arcane vocabulary, some peculiar to college, some peculiar to the school, and you were meant to master this. And then you were ushered in one by one, and the college seniors sat on chairs put on tables, and you, poor fellow, sat down below, and they barked questions at you, and you were meant to answer. It was a total farce from beginning to end. I don't know when it stopped. I don't know whether the word list still exists or not. But it was not taken seriously, by certainly by the seniors, and I think everyone who went there as a junior who had any gumption in him realised what a farce it was and rather enjoyed it.
What was the discipline like within the house? Were the monitors seen as being fair when you were a junior pupil?
I remember them as being fair, and they, at that time, college was in the late afternoon and during the prep time consisted of three rooms, which are called election rooms, and a monitor supervised each room and made sure that it was absolute quiet, and so you get on with your prep, which wasn't a difficult task because you had a lot of prep to do, and we were on the whole a fairly studious, disciplined bunch. And then one of the three monitors would go around when it was bedtime and lights out and try to hush us up.
Do you ever remember being punished, or contemporaries being punished for anything?
I remember being punished. I suppose it was for talking off the lights out. And the punishment was just having to run around Dean's Yard at about 7 o'clock in the morning, which was hardly serious punishment, even though it was snow on, it was on the ground at the time.
One of the traditions which I've come across, but I've never spoken to anybody about, was new scholars having a race around College Garden.
No, quite unknown.
I wonder if that...
In fact, College Garden was almost out of bounds to us. We were allowed in there basically only on the day in which the people came down, the dons came down from Christchurch and from Trinity to preside over the formal election ceremony. And then I think we were allowed under sufferance into the garden, I think.
But you presumably went to the Abbey every day? In the evening to St Faith's Chapel, you mentioned.
The whole entire school went to the Abbey every morning. The difference being the people who were Jewish or Muslim, I don't know if there were any, but certainly were obviously some people who were Jewish, would not turn to the right when the creed was said, or left, as the case may be, towards the altar.
And Do you remember any other events in the Abbey? Did you have a commend whilst you
Yes.
were there?
I remember two commems, and it was a simpler commem then than it became now. And I have to say that I went about 8 years ago, whenever it was, the big commem, and I did not enjoy the flummery it had become. It was a much simpler version, and I contrasted it. The modern commem, if it's still done the same way, unfavourably compared with what I remember twice. The other thing which we did get involved in was, of course, when, as she then was, Princess Elizabeth married Prince Philip, and the senior college seniors were dressed in surplices, and in the photographs you see them, the royal couple coming out, you can still make out who they were if you know who they were. The rest of us were kind of ushers, so showing people, the guests, to their places in the Abbey. And of course the Abbey was not the technicolor glory that it is now, but equally you didn't have to pay to go in.
When you became captain of the Scholars, what was the experience like? What were your responsibilities?
I suppose just about none. I really don't remember any specific duties I had to do. Obviously, Latin prayers was something I attended and might have had to say something there, though I think the headmaster did most of the work there. I think it was basically honorific. I think I was technically chairman of the Games Committee, if that was what it's still called, which consisted of the heads, the boy heads of the various sports, who met to discuss absolutely nothing worth discussing, that I can recall. It was an honorific title, I think, really. Apart from that, it was just, but it was as captain of the King's Scholars that I made the speech to welcome the King.
Was there still corporal punishment at the school at that time?
Not that I know of at all. Certainly not in college in my time.
And degrees. I haven't asked you about degrees. Do you remember the degrees?
Oh, yes. I competed in one and didn't get anything for it, didn't walk away with the guinea. It was up school. School was, of course, had no roof at that time. The school was much smaller. And the bar was, I think it's still bent, probably, still, was in position. Yes, I do remember that.
Did people come from outside of the school to spectate? Was it a well?
Not as far as I know, no. I think it's entirely school.
And then I want to talk to you a little bit about the end of your school career and what you did next. So you just said you decided to read history at university at first.
Yes, I think I was probably most of the way in my mind to changing to do PPE. Probably sometime, let me roll back a little bit. After I election to Christchurch was in December 49, I then left the history side for my and did modern languages for my last two terms. I think it was probably during that time that I decided I did not want to read history. I would prefer to read PPE at Oxford.
Were you always clear that you wanted to go to Oxford, and was Christchurch the natural choice?
My father was at John's Cambridge, so it was a bit of a strain deciding to support the dark blues rather than light blues.
But he forgave you.
He forgave me.
And so you went up to Christchurch and then changed to read PPE, and then went on to have an incredibly sort of long and distinguished career in the Foreign Office.
I had 2 years in the Army and then the Foreign Office. Mm.
Why did you choose that as a career? Had you thought about that whilst at school?
I was a competitive little beast once upon a time, and I didn't have any particular family roots in England which gave me a clue as to where I wanted to go next, except my father, who had left the academic world for government service basically during the war. In my second year at Oxford, I became aware of the Civil Service and Foreign Office exams, and some of my friends were competing, and I decided to put my name forward. And also, with a Anglo-American background and having spent a couple of holidays in France and being quite interested in what was going on politically in Europe, there seemed to be something which I should put my name forward for, and I did.
Was there a lot of political awareness in the school, do you think, because of the proximity to Westminster?
I think the school as a whole was probably conservative at the time.
Mm. But you were very conscious of sort of international affairs and Cold War?
Cold War, less so, because it really only got underway maybe in my last year and a half.
And did the masters talk to you about things that were going on in the news? Did you discuss
that? Not that I recall, as a matter of fact, no.
Do you think your education at Westminster helped you in your career? Did you think back to your time here ever?
It taught me that I can write essays on almost any subject. The scholarship exam to Christchurch, one of the papers was, I don't know if it's still one, an essay paper, 3 hours. And I wrote an essay on one subject which was given to me, which was humbug. And I have no idea what I said, but it was obviously, if you can write an essay on any subject whatsoever, the principle obviously being whether you have a well-stocked mind. And it's fun to let it loose on a subject. And I could still, I think, and this probably did help me in the diplomatic service, I could still write much better than I could speak, I think.
And you sent both of your sons to Westminster?
Yes, I have 3. The third one spoiled the thing by getting a scholarship to Winchester.
Was it always clear to you that you would want your children, or some of your children, to come to Westminster?
Yes, I think so.
And did you find it very different as a parent? Do you think it had changed in that time?
I think it had become much more relaxed in many ways, and this is certainly what our children taught us. I think during John Carlton's time, the relaxation probably got underway, and then under John Ray as well. I don't know the details of it, but the world was changing, and it's always been a thesis of mine that the gap between school and the outside world can only be a certain distance, and as the outside world changes, so schools change too, and this was a process that was going on.
Do you think you had a different experience as a parent to your parents? Do you think you were more involved in the school?
My parents, being outside the country, were really not at all involved. We came to parents' evenings and things like that, and later one of our sons at Oxford met someone who became housemaster of Grant's, David Hargreaves, who you would have known. And so we went to Grant's 2 or 3 times while David was housemaster there. We're still in touch with him.
And do you think the school's changed in a positive way in time?
I'm sure that it has become academically outstanding. I think it may have lost something of its wider ethos. I don't know this from experience myself, but let me put it perhaps another way. There were some thickies in the school when we were here, and the school had room for them. And I'm not sure that nowadays, the pressures of the school on the school and getting into the school may not have made it too highly selective. The school may prosper under this, but I'm not sure that it's quite as comfortable a place. It may be rather more stressed. As I say, I do not know this at first hand, but I would not be surprised if that's the case. I looked, for example, in the Elizabethan at the list of people who are... not the Elizabethan in this case, I think the college magazine, a list of where the college seniors are going and what subjects they're reading. And I'm sure they're wonderful modern subjects like medicine and computer science. I miss the classics and the history and the PPE, which used to be up there in my time. Now, the world has changed, and I make no judgment about this.
And I suppose to wrap up, is there anything that you would like to say that I haven't given you the opportunity to say?
Flore at Westminster Monasteriensis.
That's a great way to end. Thank you very much.
Okay.